It's time for Caffeinated Comics, a lively discussion and debate on comics, film, television, and collectibles, all fueled by the magic of Frappuccinos. Caffeinated Comics is sponsored by Chimeras Comics. Chimeras is your one stop for comic books, graphic novels, hero clicks, Magic the Gathering, and more. Explore the fantastic at Chimeras Comics. And now, here's your hosts, John and Steven.
Thank you. This is Caffeinated Comics, and I am your host, John Clark. With me, as always, is my co-host,
Steven Brown.
And today, Joe Pakovitz is back.
Hello, hello.
How are you?
I'm doing good.
Good.
Everyone sounds great.
Everyone's great.
So today, I apologize in advance. This is another one of those podcasts where it took us a long time to figure out the technical problems, and we're pre-wired on coffee.
Our listeners don't know that, though.
No, usually
they will.
They do now.
No, they will. It becomes very evident. There's a lot of podcasts where you get to about the 20-minute mark, and you're like, wow, everybody's talking over everybody.
Oh, that coffee really kicked in.
And they got loud. Mm.
There's a lot of people getting into a long story, and then they get about a third of the way through it, and then you hear somebody, usually me, going, yeah, I know, because this, because my long story.
I do enjoy our stories.
Yeah.
I must say.
And you know what? The small group of the elite that listen to the podcast.
They're elite, though.
Also enjoy. That's why I said elite.
I've heard a lot of good things about it.
You're not a small crowd. Mm. You're the right crowd.
The right crowd. I like that.
Yeah. You could be a bigger right crowd.
Yeah. They're like the 1%.
No, that's not good.
No.
People don't want to
Oh, yeah, I guess those are the bad guys, aren't they?
Yes, that's the evil empire of the world.
Because there's so little of them, but then they have so much money.
Mm-hmm. That's
like thing. Our topic for today, Iron Man and the Avengers.
Mm-hmm.
Iron Man has a lot of money and funds the Avengers.
That's right.
Who have no money.
Yes.
Yeah, he's the Bruce Wayne.
He bought them their house.
He did. He bought them a mansion,
mm-hmm.
and then a...
And then several skyscrapers.
Yeah, several skyscrapers, yeah. All of which got blown up.
Blown up.
Yeah. You'd think people would just stop leasing buildings out to Tony Stark. Be like, you're probably going to get abducted in the space. Yeah, fuck you.
I don't think they lease buildings to Tony Stark. I think he buys the land and he builds them.
Oh, yeah, I guess that makes sense.
Now, Reed Richards, they leased him the building.
They did, and he had to buy it, though.
Yeah, he got
the Baxter building.
He got evicted a couple of times.
Yeah.
He bought the wrong stock one day and went broke.
Yeah,
that was one of the weirdest stories I've ever seen.
Oh, in the original one?
Yeah.
Did you ever read
Lee Kirby? Yes,
did you ever read that Marvel Knights 4?
Oh, they're not good.
They started good. I liked it when it started. That was early McNiven stuff?
Yeah, but it was Roberto Aguirre Sacasa.
Oh, was that?
Yeah, the writer. He was supposed to take over for Mark Waid, and then the fan backlash was so strong to bring them back, because... Well, GMS fired Mark Waid and Mike Wingo.
That seems like a mistake.
Let's
fire that fan-favorite creative team.
Right.
Well, I think they had an angle for the movie, because this is a couple of years before the movie happened, mm-hmm. and they were and basically Bill GMS went, hey, I want you to change the whole book to be like this movie pitch we're doing, which they ended up not doing in the movie at all.
Mm-hmm.
And he told Mark Waid, he was like, they're going to move out to the suburbs, and they're going to have wacky adventures with their next-door neighbor. And Mark Waid said, no, I'm not doing that. I just wrote a story where Dr. Doom wears his mother's skin and sends
and
Richard's children into hell.
And scars his face.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. He's like, I'm not doing that. And he's like, well, then you're fired. And then that was the first time I saw the fan backlash of like, you can't fire this creative team. You need to bring them back. And they did. They came back. Mark Waid never lost an issue, but Michael Wingo came back like 6 issues later. Howard Porter did that one story.
Which one was that?
The one where Reed takes over Latveria.
Oh, yeah. That wasn't Waringo? Okay.
No, it was Porter. Because Waringo could only do about 8 issues a year.
Yeah.
So he was going to take a break anyway, and then he was fired, and by the time he could get back on,
it's
he
weird
was
that
so
they fired
behind.
Him and Waid instead of just Waid who's writing, but maybe Waringo walked.
Well, I think they wanted to change the whole team. But basically, in the meantime, they hired McNiven and Sacasa to take over Fantastic Four. And then when they went back on, they were just like, oh, okay, we'll have two Fantastic Four books. And I think it's the only time they ever had two team books.
Yeah, at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But I never liked the Marvel Knights 4.
A suburban Fantastic Four, like what, Human Torch like would light the barbecue or what?
Pretty much. That's what Sacasa started writing. Like they moved out to Jersey and Sue got a job teaching middle school.
Yeah, it was kind of weird. I liked it. I liked the first story arc. then they it got weird. They like went to the forest and fought like aliens who were abducting. It was like really
like the
dark
Jersey
and,
Devil.
Jersey Devil wasn't. I guess it wasn't alien.
It was not very sci-fi. It was not a lot of fun.
And I guess I do forget that it was coming out around the time of Wade's Fantastic Four. So it's like, oh, here's a really shitty Fantastic Four book up against a really great Fantastic
really good
Four
Fantastic
book.
Four
yeah,
book.
It's like when Grant Morrison was writing X-Men and Chuck Austin was writing Uncanny.
Mm-hmm.
And like. Chuck Austin just put everybody in black uniforms and
didn't really know what to do with the X-Men.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It was kind of that era. This is not the book we're supposed to be talking about.
Oh, yeah.
We can just keep talking about this book and I will change the title because I can talk about Fantastic Four
all day long.
Oh, yeah. Forever.
No, but we're on a mission. Literally. We're here to discuss John loves Iron Man.
I love Iron Man. Iron Man is my second favorite Marvel hero.
Behind Spider-Man.
Yes. I love Batman, Spider-Man, Iron Man, and Fantastic Four. Mm-hmm. And when Green Lantern is done right, like when most of the Geoff Johns run, then I love Green Lantern. But those are my pillars of superhero. And then everybody else,
yeah,
you know, Superman, all right, Flash. It depends on
who's
doing
writing
it.
Yeah.
Justice League depends on who's on the Justice League and who's doing
and
it
and who's writing it. Yeah,
but those four titles, actually family of titles for those are the ones I always read.
Yeah,
but the interesting thing about me is I've always loved Iron Man. I have never cared about Avengers.
And we're here to find out why.
Yeah, it's kind of like someone who reads only Wolverine solo title and never
and
reads
X-Men.
Yeah.
Yeah, it seems crazy, and I know it's crazy, but Steven, you're the biggest Avengers guy I know.
Yeah, which is interesting. When I started reading comics, Bendis had just taken over Avengers, and he had done a run where they went to like England, and there was like a new Captain Britain introduced, which became Lionheart. And then really quickly, they did Disassembled, which went into New Avengers. So then you got, you know, Ben is pretty much replacing, like, you know, Hank Pym, Wasp, Hawkeye, and all these other awesome characters with, like, Luke Cage and Spider-Woman and Sentry and all these other idiots that care for. So when he did New Avengers, and that lasted the next, like, 10 or 12 years, I actually don't consider any of those characters Avengers. Like, Spider-Man in my head isn't an Avenger. Wolverine's not an Avenger. Luke Cage isn't an Avenger. My Avengers are, like, Tigra, Hercules, Jack of Hearts, Hawkeye, like, the older, you know, what classic Avengers. Like
Jack of Hearts is my favorite guy. Because not only does he look crazy.
For those of you who don't know what he looks like, he's pretty much a walking playing card with radiation powers.
He's a cosmic hero who decided he'd be a playing card.
Yeah.
And I also like him because if you say it in a New Jersey accent, it's a great insult.
Yeah, you're a jack of hots.
Yeah, my face, you jack of hots.
That's awesome.
I think that's worth liking him for that.
Yeah, he's pretty awesome. For the most part, all the Avengers I like haven't been Avengers monthly since I've been reading comics up until very recently. Hickman's new run on Avengers is phenomenal. But then even he's replacing guys like, you know, what are considered more like classic Avengers with like Cannonball and Sunspot and like, you know, more mutants.
Yeah,
and stuff.
Yeah, they
but for some mutants, reason, that's okay with me. I'm just like, all right, I'll take it because it's such a good book.
Well, it's weird because my experience is kind of the same. I also got into comics around one of the low points that I felt for the Avengers. I mean, you had that great run in the early 70s where you had the Skrull War.
Yeah,
you had a bunch of really good cosmic story arcs, and then all of a sudden, the late 70s come along and. You had some stories that weren't so great. So,
although you did have George Perez art in the late
70s. You had
George
Perez art.
The art was very good. And I have the DVD-ROM. I've actually read Avengers 1 to 200. So I've read
You've already read more than I have.
And I've read all the Bendis stuff.
Yeah.
I've read all the Geoff Johns stuff. I've read all the Kurt Busiek, George Perez stuff.
That is one of my favorite runs.
That is very good. That is the only, if you look on my shelf, I have the original omnibus for Kirby stuff. I have the Kree-Skrull War for Neil Adams.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And I have Avengers Assemble for
Busiek
and Perez. Although most of it, and Avengers Forever is part of that run. But most of it I have because of the artwork. And the problem with the Avengers to me is that they're never quite delineated as characters. They're not the Fantastic Four where it's all about the interactions of these four people. And
right.
Which is obvious. One of the reasons I love the Fantastic Four is every now and then somebody replaces one member and it screws everything up.
Yep.
And sometimes it's really cool, like a She-Hulk. Sometimes it's really bad, like an Ant-Man.
Right.
the proof of that is always it's about these four people. It's about this family. And the X-Men, especially because I go back to the Claremont days of X-Men,
exactly.
It's all about their personalities. It's all about their character flaws.
It's all about the writing. Yeah,
but it's all about characters who are struggling with their limitations. And that was the thing in X-Men which made it the most about teenage, the teenage experience. Because it wasn't just the fact that, oh, nobody likes us. Oh, we're different, which is the obvious stuff. But the way Claremont wrote them, it's like, I can barely control my own body. I have a major part of myself, which I'm not allowed to let anybody see.
Yeah.
Right. You know, Nightcrawler is scary looking, even though he's a happy guy and he has an amazing teleporting power.
Everyone sees a blue demon first.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Cyclops is the most obvious. Cyclops can never take off his glasses or he'll kill you.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, Wolverine is always wants to kill you.
Yeah. Wolverine is when he was originally wrote, and this is what I always liked, is Wolverine to me is always was placed on the X-Men so they could keep an eye on him. Because he was a lunatic. He would just go crazy in the middle of a fight and almost kill, like, Pyro and Avalanche. And then, like, Cyclops has got to, you know, blast him to stop him from killing one of them. And now it's like, you know, they've done so much with the character since then. He's really kind of become so oversaturated. It's hard to like Wolverine now.
Well, Wolverine is definitely has moved up to be their second biggest hero. I think no one's ever going to remove Spider-Man from the spotlight. Spider-Man has been immensely popular since 1961.
It's not going anywhere.
No. I think he's the only one. There are very many bad runs of the Spider-Man comic.
Yeah.
But I don't think he's ever dipped in popularity as a character.
No, he'll always be at the top. And Wolverine's a close second at this point. But yeah, but that has a lot to do with the movie. The last 10 years with Hugh Jackman, you know, it's like, you know, Wolverine. I think actually it really started because no one cared about Wolverine in like the, you know, the 80s and stuff. Like he wasn't that big. He didn't have too many of his own books. You know, Frank Miller got a hold of him in the late 80s and he got popular. And then
the early 80s. And then
the cartoon show, I think, the X-Men cartoon show, because everyone in my generation or my age is Wolverine and Gambit crazy. And that's because it was the overexposure of both those characters. I mean, if you watch that cartoon, Cyclops is kind of a douche. You know, he's not interesting.
Well, he becomes a douche in the comics, too.
Cyclops is hard to write if he's not written well.
That's what I'm saying. I think he's a great character, but it's like I can only point to 4 or 5 instances where somebody wrote him really, really good.
Right.
You know, it's Joss Whedon's run on Astonishing X-Men. Claremont's run wrote him really well. So it's like but for the most part, he's the guy with the, you know, stick up his ass who, like, you know.
Yeah, because the thing about Cyclops' character, which I like about him, is that he has to be completely controlled and reserved because his whole power is about destruction, which he can't control. So he tries to control everything, which makes him a great leader. But it also makes him very reserved. Now, if you can't play that subtext, if you can't play what's going on beneath that hard, cold exterior, because there's a lot of sadness under that hard, cold exterior. That's why I love Cyclops. He's one of my favorite characters.
And that's also why I love the Astonishing X-Men, because when the first several runs of that, when he gets deconstructed by Emma Frost, and she gets into his mind and she says, you realized why Charles Xavier made you the leader, because everybody else had something and you had nothing
except this
destructive power. And that was one of the most brilliantly written Cyclops scenes that I've ever read.
And it's Joss Whedon, because he's a great writer. Claremont got him. Whedon got him. Lobdell had a fairly good handle on him back in the 90s. Like during the John Romita Jr. run. But, you know, if you don't have a good handle on him, he just comes off as a dick.
Yeah, and I think that's what happened in the cartoon. The cartoon's not going to do anything other than it shows you how to play with action figures, you know? And it's just like, but then you got guys like Gambit, who's cool and picking fights with everyone, and Wolverine, who's fighting Cyclops all the time. It's like those characters become more popular and then hence become oversaturated and then ruin them for people like me who are like, oh, like, come on, Cyclops in the, you know,
and that's why it's hard. That's why it's hard to write any kind of ensemble book like that, like Justice League or Avengers, is because they're so character driven. It's about the combinations and the characters and how they interact with each other and how they learn to work together. That's why I think the Avengers movie was so good, because it really played to that. Joss Whedon really played to that.
Yeah, pretty much every one of them interacts with somebody else. There's a couple lines between Thor and Hawkeye. Thor interacts with, you know, Captain America. He has a tussle with Iron Man. He fights the Hulk. It's like, that's why I think for me personally, this is probably why I like Avengers so much, is team books to me are always the best books. I tried reading Geoff Johns' run on Green Lantern just ended and a new guy started. I can't remember the guy's name.
Vendetti.
And I tried reading it, and I'm reading him halfway through and I'm like, this is good, but I don't care about Green Lantern unless he's with Superman, Flash, and Batman, and Wonder Woman.
But even the Green Lantern core?
Yeah, see, because to me, it's all the same guy. It's just, they're all
just from different
planets. And this is my problem with Justice League versus Avengers. I like the team books, but I'll always pick Avengers over Justice League, because Justice League always stands like, you know, here's 7 guys, you know, and no matter what the threat is, Superman or Green Lantern should be able to take care of it by themselves. All these other guys are just filler, you know? And Grant Morrison and Mark Waid's runs aside, and maybe the Justice League International, which is more of a comedy book in my mind anyway, there's very few things that just those two guys couldn't do on their own. So you don't really need the Justice League. And then they're all the same guy. Like, they're all kind of, like, standing around on their hips. Good job, Batman, Wonder Woman, good work. It's like, but the Avengers were always, like, even from the very beginning, and this is truer of more Marvel characters anyways, they're all widely different people, and they don't get along. Captain America doesn't like Hawkeye. Quicksilver thinks he should be the leader, and Wanda thinks Cap's cute. And it's just like, they're not a group of people who are all agreeing. And I think that's what I always liked about the Avengers, is like, they all have the same mindset. Like, we want to patrol the world, we want to protect the world. We don't agree on many things, but we agree on that, and we can, you know, form a fighting unit to go take care of anything.
And one of the reasons I like Avengers over the straight, you know, Justice League stories, I mean, the Giffen Justice League International in Europe and America are brilliant, mostly because they took B-listers, and yeah, who were more interesting as characters anyway. But with,
and they turned it into a comedy, which had never been done before or since, and it was a great comedy.
Mm-hmm.
But with Avengers, they're not and this is like the Marvel way, as opposed to the DC way anyway, they're not afraid to take you behind the scenes. So you see them when they're not being superheroes, when they're just sitting around the Avengers Mansion and they're having personal dramas.
Yeah.
And they're people. And only it's not the teen angst that you get with the X-Men. It's more some adult problems and relationship issues that you get with the Avengers. When it's written well, it's really, really good.
Yeah. Mm. And I think that's something I've always liked, is just like, you know, it's... Even from, like, the really beginning, too, was that, like, anybody and everybody could be an Avenger. And my timeline's fuzzy because I'm, you know, I have the best memory, but I think...
You're also reading omnibuses from different eras at the same time.
This is true. I'm mixing a lot of stuff. So I'm at this point, I started reading West Coast Avengers. I'm reading Leighton's Iron Man stuff.
How does West Coast Avengers hold up? Because West Coast Avengers was the one Avengers book I liked. And this is because I was such a big Iron Man fan, and my favorite armor is the Silver Centurion armor. And when they launched West Coast Avengers, he was in that armor, and yep, Hawkeye was there, and I've always liked Hawkeye.
Yeah.
And then the rest of the characters, I was like, nah, Wonder Man, Tigra. But that was the book I stuck with. I really liked it for a while, and then I slowly fell off.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering, was it my taste, or was it, how well does the book hold up? Is it worth rereading those
stories? Well, I've never reread it in the first place. This is right. Something where, you know, a lot of the traits haven't been available.
Now,
reading them now, I like them, but then it's I'm a bias. I'm like 3 or 4 issues in. But I'm biased because I want to see, you know, the first time they formed the West Coast Avengers, what Wonder Man was doing, what Tiger's running around doing. I think, you know, I love Hawkeye. It's like, this is a team. Hank Pym, you know, say what you want about that guy, but I got a lot of respect for Hank Pym. It's like, I love all these characters, and I love them all interacting, working together. And I think even the idea of it, and it's something, you know, I like the idea of, like, the Justice League International. It's like, all right, it's not Justice League America. We're international now. We're protecting the planet. West Coast Avengers is the idea of expansion. We're going to try to, you know, protect the East Coast. We're going to protect the West Coast. We spread our resources out, you know?
And West Coast is the closest that comes to the Giffen Justice League books that you like so much. Because
yeah,
it does have a lighter
fun
tone.
To it, yeah.
It's
yeah,
more fun. It's not as cosmic and space opera-y as the best of the early 70s Avengers.
That's a good spin. What puts it on? Because as you guys were talking about the Justice League, I was thinking, you know, I like the Justice League more because it's the heavy hitters. So, you know, if I want to learn more about the Flash, I don't have to read the Justice League. I can read the Flash.
Yeah.
If I want to know more about Batman, I can read.
They all have their own
Batman
monthly book.
Right. So you're bringing all of that extra weight when you come to the Justice League. When you see the seven guys in the room planning to save the Earth. Part of you is like, okay, Green Lantern just fought Sinestro, and Batman just fought Joker, and, you know, Superman lost his powers, and this is, you can play the subtext
yeah,
from the other books in your own head, and it doesn't need to be there. Justice League is always supposed to be the blockbuster book. It's supposed to be the biggest action, everybody's thrown in. It doesn't
right,
need to be about the character interactions, because almost everybody can exist outside their book.
Right.
That's an opposite to Fantastic Four, or X-Men, where they only live in that book,
yeah,
but I'd say 75% of that book is the character interactions. With Avengers, it's always been in the middle, because Avengers has always been about the big blockbuster action, but most of those guys do not have their own books. It's
yeah,
like
the big three do. You got
the big
always
three
have
always
Cap,
have
Thor
yeah,
and Iron Man book, but Hawkeye has limited runs here and there. You know, Hank Pym, I think it's a miniseries every 4 or 5 years. You know, an Ant-Man miniseries or something. Most of those guys, even Vision, will have like a miniseries here and there. But yeah, you're right. You get the big three who've got their monthlies, and that's it. Because even that's what I like about the Avengers is, like, Justice League. It's the seven biggest heroes in the DC universe, and they all have, like you said, except for Martian Manhunter or Aquaman, depending on what year it is, they all have monthly books. The Avengers aren't they're Earth's mightiest heroes, but the power scale in the Marvel Universe is way lower than what it is in DCU. Green Lantern and Superman can mop the floor with just about any Avengers lineup.
And that's why one of my favorite books ever is the JLA Avengers crossover that Busiek and George Perez did.
Yeah. Because they actually address it in that book, mm-hmm. where they say, look, this, you know, the Avengers can barely hold it together, but they have to fight the same level of threats Superman and the Justice League have to. Right. You know, Starro is a big threat, but then, you know, find me a bigger threat than Galactus. And repeatedly, the Avengers have to team up with the Fantastic Four and the Hulk and go fight Galactus because he's such a big threat.
Well, the purpose of the Avengers is a little different than the purpose of the Justice League. Avengers is kind of the glue at the center of the Marvel Universe. Other characters come and go. Fantastic Four will make an appearance. Spider-Man will make an appearance. These guys pop in and out. You really don't see that a lot with Justice League because it is supposed to be
everybody's
their blockbuster
already in
guy.
The Justice
League. Everybody's already in it. But when I think of Marvel Universe, I think of the Avengers because that's really the center, I think, of the Marvel Universe, and everything else is kind of revolves around that. The separate books revolve around it. You have good titles like Spider-Man and Fantastic Four and X-Men, but they're all involved at some point or another
with what
the
Avengers.
Avengers
are doing.
See, I always think of the Avengers last. I think a lot of it maybe is because I'm coming from the early 80s, which is not a great time for Avengers. I mean, it's Captain Marvel, it's Star Fox.
Yeah,
it's love
very
that.
Flat.
I love it. It's like Black Knight and Hercules.
Yeah.
And it's not like the cool Captain Marvel. It's like Photon Captain Marvel. Yeah. And it's like, she's cool, but she's not as cool as Captain Marvel.
Yeah, I still have a problem with that. Was when I would read it as a kid, I'm like, well, this is boring. And then I would read West Coast Avengers, and I'd be like, okay, this is better because it's got Iron Man. And then I'd read Iron Man, I'd be like, wow,
that's
Iron
awesome.
Man.
Yeah.
And I had then I'd read Fantastic Four, which was John Byrne. It's one of the best runs of Fantastic Four.
Yeah.
And I was just constantly...
And Claremont was on X-Men at this point,
Claremont
right?
was on X-Men, yep. So I gravitated towards that. And then I was constantly impressed. I was constantly impressed with Fantastic Four. And I didn't buy it initially because my friend bought it and I would read his copies. And that's the same time as Simonson Thor, which went right over my head, I have to admit. Yeah. When I was 11, 12, I was mm-hmm. just like... Well, this is Lord of the Rings. What's going on?
Yeah.
This is dense. And I put it down, and I didn't read his whole run until they did an omnibus. But the Avengers to me always felt like the most DC book in the Marvel Universe. The same way that they say Batman is the most Marvel character in the DC Universe.
Yeah.
The Avengers is the most DC book because it's about a bunch of heroes that are very powerful, fighting very big threats. And for the most part, they have a little friction, but they don't have nearly as much friction as the X-Men or the Fantastic Four at that prime.
Right.
And I loved when Bendis took over and he said, you know what, I'm going to turn this into the Justice League. So yeah, I'm going to put Spider-Man and Wolverine in it.
Yeah, well, they were always modeled on the Justice League.
I think that was
League.
The pitch for it. Yeah.
Yeah.
We need to put, you know, the A-list of Marvel heroes in the Avengers. And New Avengers, I did not like it, but I think it just, to me, it overstayed its welcome. It 5 or 6 years too long, where I was ready for, you know, Hawkeye and all these other guys to come back after like the fourth or fifth year, and then I got 6 more years of them being outlaws and then being Skrulls.
And
it was all crossover heavy, and I don't like that.
Yeah, and
like
I bought the oversized hardcovers,
mm-hmm.
And after the first couple of books, it doesn't have a direction anymore because it's going into the crossover.
In and out of crossovers.
Coming
it's
out
not
of the crossover, building
thing.
Up to the other crossover. And they were so central, whereas when I was reading Fantastic Four, maybe there was an issue.
Yeah.
Talked about actually, a lot of those, Secret Invasion, Fear Itself, they were miniseries. You could skip them.
Well, we talked about containability.
Right.
And when you're reading a book, you know, you can read Iron Man and only Iron Man. You can read Spider-Man and only Spider-Man and not have to get any of these books. With the ensemble books like X-Men and Avengers, they're so intertwined with everything else that you get all these crossovers. That's one of the biggest problems I had with X-Men for a while in the late
90s.
80s. In the early 90s was all these darn
crossover.
Yeah. And now I'm buying books with characters I don't like.
Yeah.
To get the full story of the character I do like. And they knew
what
they were doing. They were trying to raise sales on the slower books.
Yeah.
And, you know, to his credit, he did make Avengers one of the better selling books at the time, you know, New Avengers. But it's like.
But I think he didn't go far enough with New Avengers. I think where he said, let's turn it into Justice League and put our most popular characters. Let's put Spider-Man and Wolverine and Captain America and Iron Man in it. Great. But, you know, let's not put Thor or Hulk in it. Let's put Spider-Woman and Luke Cage. It's like.
Okay. These were his favorites.
Yeah, now you're
this
taking a
very
left turn.
No, him writing for himself.
He did good work with Luke Cage, but did anybody really need to see Power Man come back?
No.
Power Man, Iron Fist, Spider-Woman,
totally,
Sentry.
Totally inessential.
Yeah,
it was indulgent from the beginning, and I'm like, I'm not built into these characters. It should have been Thor and Hulk.
Well, at the time, and this was I was thinking, is when I was reading it, I remember thinking, like, okay, I started reading comics. There wasn't a Thor book, and he wasn't an invincible book. Well, what happened to Thor? And then, okay, they did Ragnarok during Disassembled.
Yeah, he was dead for a while. He was dead through Civil War.
And then issue, like, three or four New Avengers, they talk about this character, the Sentry. I'm like, well, who the hell is the Sentry? And then they find him, and he's a blonde guy, super powerful, in a prison with a beard. I'm like, oh, my God, Thor has amnesia. He's crazy. They found Thor. They just don't know it yet. And
it's
then
like,
it was
it's like Namor.
Yeah. You know, and it was its whole thing, and it was, you know, I'm like, duh, that would have been so much better if that was Thor with amnesia, and it's
yeah,
like,
but they
missed
had,
opportunity.
Yeah. But Paul and Jenkins had already created the Sentry, and it was a 6-issue limited
yeah,
series.
Yeah, well, I had to go back explained. And find that out, yeah.
And that was a decent limited series, and it was
I think it worked as a limited series. I don't think it works as a reoccurring character. He's not somebody who I need to have come back.
It was a nice little Elseworlds. Basically, the original limited series was, what if the Marvel Universe had a Superman?
Yeah.
And what would he be? What weird psychological thing would Stan Lee have given him to make him more relatable, to make him less of a god than Superman is?
Yeah.
And it worked. And the conceit was that Stan had actually created him.
They tried to pull
it
over.
It was a Silver Age book, and like they got John Romita to draw some of it.
Yeah. That was actually a really cool concept, but I think the internet blew
it up.
Yeah. If that had come out in the 80s, people would have lost their shit.
Yeah, but when they brought him back, they were just like, they made him crazier and crazier and crazier. Until Dark Avengers, where he's just a psychopath and he tears Ares in half, and then they kill him off at the end of Siege. And I'm just like, well, and that was my problem with all of Bendis' runs. He would go into these big crossovers, and then one thing would happen in a panel, and I'm like, well, that's it? There was no emotional payoff or anything.
Yeah, the only thing I did
that was
like,
Avengers versus X-Men for me.
Yeah,
was that same thing you just described.
A versus X.
Right.
Yeah, I borrowed that from Steven, and I didn't like it. I was reading it when it came out, and I was enjoying it because John Romita Jr. drew the first four issues. I like everything John Romita Jr. draws.
Yeah.
I hated the Kick-Ass movie, but I kind of liked the comic book.
I flipped through the comic. I can't read it.
It's good.
The little girl calls somebody like a cunt or something, and I'm just like, well, I'm done with this
it's
book.
Mark Millar.
And that was in like the first four issues, and I'm like, I don't need this.
She did not call anyone a meatball.
That's true. I'm sure there's a meatball in there somewhere.
but I love John Romita Jr.'s artwork, and then it switched to, I think, Copiel. Who's also really good.
Awesome.
Well, he's great with Thor, but...
But I immediately lost interest in the book.
Yeah.
And then when you lent me the hardcover, and I read the whole thing, and I was like, I didn't like this.
Yeah, the first two
I liked it less
good,
than Fear Itself, and most people point to Fear Itself as being the worst of
Fear Itself was, I thought, was pointless. It really was just, okay, Avengers, we've got Captain America and Thor movie coming out. Let's do a crossover with the two of them. What do we got? And it's like, all right, we'll have a Captain America villain grab a Thor weapon and, you know, bring back a Thor god. And it's like, well, you know... And other than looking good, because Stuart Immonen was drawing it, that was a 7-month, 8-month waste of time.
And that was supposed to be just a crossover between those two books. And then Marvel went, oh, no, this can be our Marvel Universe event.
For the year, because we need something every single year.
I did like, because Fraction wrote Fear Itself, and I didn't like Fear Itself.
Oh, it's Fraction?
But his Iron Man tie-in issues were great.
The stuff with the Great Gargoyle was awesome.
Because his Iron Man run is good.
Yeah, his
Iron
Man,
whole Iron
that
Man
whole
awesome.
Iron Man run is wonderful.
I'm waiting for the omnibus on that.
Oh, yeah.
There are two oversized hardcovers. I'm just waiting for them to finish the oversized hardcovers.
Yeah.
And I think Fear Itself might be the holdup, because it's been a long time since Volume 2. Volume 3 would be Fear Itself, and I think people are going to look and go, I don't want to pay $30 for Fear Itself and then two issues.
Yeah.
I think that might have been what stopped it. And then I think they would have to do a Volume 4 because it was that long.
Yeah. Well, that's what I do like about when they do these crossovers is there's usually one or two hidden gems that really make it shine. And with Fear Itself, it was the Iron Man stuff and the stuff.
Yeah, and Iron Man has to go to Asgard. And he has to give up something precious for Odin to help him. So he drinks.
Yep.
Yeah.
And that
he gives up his sobriety.
Yeah, and then he teams him up with a dwarf to build
pretty
a god
much destroyer
armor, who just who's an alcoholic.
Yeah.
So he's like, he keeps making him
drink
with him.
More. Yeah.
Yeah, and Fraction himself is a recovering alcoholic. So
is
that's
he really?
Yeah,
he said this on Word Balloon on John Sentris's podcast, which we love. And he said that's one of the things he brought to that book.
Oh, nice.
Which is why I think his work on Iron Man is so much higher. Because people are hit or miss with Fraction. And I think his more down-to-earth heroes work really well. Hawkeye's very good.
Yeah.
His Iron Man run, I think, is one of the best Iron Man runs that has ever been.
Yeah. It's
because
definitely one of my favorites.
If he has a personal connection to it. But, like, his X-Men run wasn't that great. Fear Itself wasn't that great. Thor was okay.
Yeah, his Thor I grew bored with. I think Gillian was writing X-Men during Fear Itself, and he did that whole like Juggernaut Colossus thing, which was probably one of the best things that came out of Fear Itself. You know?
His Fantastic Four is just okay. I mean, I'm 10 issues.
Yeah.
I'm 10 issues into it now, and I'm like,
nothing is really impressive.
The premise of FF is great, but
I like, but Fantastic Four,
they have yet to really
not
do
impressed
anything.
With.
Well, because they're coming off the great run by Hickman.
That's true.
Yeah, and I feel like he's trying to live up to that, but I think the pitch he had was the pitch for FF, and then Marvel's like, hey, why don't you do the main book too?
Yeah.
You know what? It's possible that he might have pitched that for Fantastic Four. It's like, I'm going to get rid of everybody.
Yeah.
It's going to be Ant-Man and She-Hulk and Medusa and Girl-Thing.
And everybody said, no, Johnny
Storm's last girlfriend.
Another book. Yeah, and I think Marvel said, FF's still selling well. Do that in that book, and then take over the other book. And then he thought, well, what can I do with the main team? Oh, I'll put them in an alternate dimension. He basically built them a TARDIS, because I thought they were in, like, the negative zone, and then they went back to ancient
Rome. Well, they're going
back
to
they're just traveling around, it seems.
Yeah, they went back to, like, things, timeline. It's basically the Fantastic Four in a TARDIS, which is pretty cool. And,
yeah, but it should
but
be...
But there's no direction
but
to
it. But it has yet to hit...
It's not going anywhere.
Right. And that's also the problem with Iron Man right now. With I just picked up all the Karen Gillan run of Iron Man.
Yeah, it's Gillan.
It's fine. It's Greg Land. It's Dale Eaglesham. Like, the art's pretty and tells the story. But it's like, it just shifts direction here and there, and he's in outer space, and it's like, I haven't seen a real Iron Man story from it yet.
No, I don't really know. They visited Extremis again briefly, and it was, you know, it just seemed, it's listless.
Yeah.
And then there are storylines where the storyline is too short, and you wish it would go longer. For example,
A rarity in these days of decompression. Yeah.
Which I like the only times I've really been interested in the new Avengers was when they got into the Illuminati stuff.
The Illuminati limited series is
great.
That's the best thing Bendis, that's my favorite thing he's come up with, because that the Illuminati is Marvel's answer to the Justice League, because those are the only six or seven characters that can go up against Justice League, and it's actually a fight.
But it's about brain power. It's not about not about physical strength.
But you do have physical strength. You've got Namor, Iron Man, Mr. Fantastic, super smart, and then Doctor Strange is probably the most powerful person in the Marvel Universe, or should be.
Well, Black Bolt.
There's another one.
And then Professor X is the most powerful telepath. But it's built around, these are the smartest minds.
And they go around
Captain America because he's simply not that smart, so they kind of...
Yeah, and the newest...
Right.
New
Avengers.
And
new Avengers.
Hulk can't be trusted, so Hulk's not in there.
Yeah,
you know,
Hank Banner can't
very
be trusted
smart.
Either.
Yeah,
you can't trust Pym. And that's what I really liked about the new Avengers book, is that it's a monthly Illuminati book, which I was begging for, you know, 8 years ago.
Is it all
that
the Illuminati?
That is a great point.
Yeah.
Great point.
Hickman's doing it. So when they did the Marvel Now, they gave Hickman both Avengers books.
Right, I loved Hickman's Fantastic Four run, but I read his, was it the main Avengers book or the Uncanny
Avengers?
They go
to Mars in... the main Avengers book, and then in Uncanny Avengers, they fight Red Skull, and that's Remender's run.
I read the first issue of Hickman, and I came back to this original point. I was like, yeah, I loved Hickman on Fantastic Four, but I love Fantastic Four Avengers. I'm like, You know, and it's like even the Avengers movie. I love Joss Whedon. I love Robert Downey Jr. as Iron Man. I've liked every one of those movies. That's why I love Avengers. It's not about Avengers for me.
Yeah, see, and to me, it's always, it's about Avengers first. So it's like, I'll be reading it monthly no matter who's writing it. Well, the Hickman's run particular, like this, to me, it feels like we just turned a corner where it's like, all right, Bendis is off the book, you know, so it's going to get more high concept. And now it's basically the Avengers getting back to, we're going to patrol the world now. We're going to not only this world, but we're going to take care of every world we can.
Well, they finally got to the core of the concept, which is a team, and they've taken it to its logical extreme. Now we're going to have several teams of Avengers. And I think that's a great idea, especially when you have now this kind of secret team at the top with the new Avengers going back to the Illuminati storyline.
And they're doing something which is, you know, so Xavier's dead, so they replace him with Beast, who's
Xavier
super
died
smart.
How
and
many
then,
times has Professor Xavier died?
How many times
more
have they
times
all died?
More times than I think Phoenix.
More than Phoenix.
Yeah, Xavier's died a lot.
Well,
so much so that
we had a whole podcast about that. We could... We couldn't think of a single major character that
hasn't been resurrected.
Died. Yeah. Not a one in either Marvel and DC who hasn't died and come back. But Professor X has died. It seems like he's died three times in the last 10 years.
I've been reading
it's
comics.
It's like at the end of every crossover, Professor X dies.
I've been reading comics since
like
2000, 2001, and I've been at a store, working at a store for like the last 8 or 9 years. And he has died and come back in between me reading X-Men books, to where I wasn't even aware that he had died and come back.
Right.
Like, that's how often he dies.
I think he died in Messiah Complex, but I never even saw him come back.
That's what I'm saying.
And then he died in Avengers vs. X-Men, and I'm like, I didn't realize he came back.
That's twice. And then in House of M, I think he died at the end of House of M, was missing.
Yeah, but House
found
of
him.
M was an alternate reality, so I
don't know, because when they all came back, he wasn't there,
House of M is when I got pretty confused with the Marvel Universe, at least the Bendis side of it.
Yeah.
And then lost it. And I think that's another problem I have with Avengers. Avengers has always been big and complex. Everybody points to those cosmic stories, the Roy Thomas stuff, the Jim Starlin stuff.
Yeah, the Korvac saga, Kree Skrull.
Korvac saga in 78,
All that big stuff, and that stuff just goes right over my head. Whereas with Fantastic Four, which is, you know, the Negative Zone, the Skrull Empire, Galactus, you always have the thing to ground you.
Yeah. Like, yeah, you know, I guess he kind of speaks for everybody, and that's
yeah,
what
just
I,
like, you know, they'll look at Galactus, and Reed will have three word balloons of like the awesome power that's going through his armor, and Sue's like, "What should we do?" And Johnny's like, "I'll shoot him with a firebolt." And Thing goes,
"It's clobberin' time."
Yeah, yeah. Thing goes, "He's got stupid purple things on his head."
Right. I'm gonna
I like that guy. I'm with that guy.
Well, the core of Fantastic Four is science fiction. The core of Avengers is still superheroes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah, Fantastic Four is not entirely a superhero book, and that's the mistake.
It's an adventure book.
The
which
bad runs
I like
of Fantastic
lot.
Four are when they try to turn it into a superhero
book.
Yeah,
the Fantastic point. Four don't go out on patrol like Daredevil or somebody. It's like they're family first, and then they're explorer second. You know?
Yeah, there's team of scientists. One scientist and his three assistants.
Yeah.
And they have those powers to get them out of the places they go to.
Right, right.
And yeah, they do have supervillains.
Sure.
Because Dr. Doom literally hates them.
Right.
And the Frightful Four was formed to attack them.
To kill them.
Right.
But for the most part, it's like, we're going to the Negative Zone, and there's a giant horseshoe crab monster with wings.
Right.
Called Annihilus.
And Blastar's riding it.
Yeah, it's a good thing we have these powers or we would die.
Yes. Yeah. You know. And I think that makes that a good book, but at least for Avengers, and this is something, you know, that I've always liked, even from the beginning, and correct me if I'm wrong, but, you know, right away bring in mutants and criminals to reform, they bring in an android to reform, Hank Pym needs a lot of reforming, Black Panther, I think, is the first black character to join a superhero team, you know, so right, and even aliens, too, they're signing up. So, to me, the Avengers is always, not as only is it anyone can be an Avenger, but everyone can be an Avenger. And that's what I've always liked is, you know, you get
There's a lot of supervillains. Hawkeye was originally a supervillain.
Hawkeye, Black Widow are both old Iron Man.
Scarlet Witch.
Quicksilver. Yeah. X-Men villains. Yep. Vision was created to destroy the Avengers.
I read an interesting thing about Avengers 2 with, you know, Joss Whedon's basically said that Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch are in it.
Yes.
And apparently they had to do some very complicated contract negotiations with Fox. Because those characters are both owned by X-Men.
Not only are they owned by that, they're both supposed to be in Days of Future Past.
Yeah, that's a rumor.
And what I've heard is in Avengers, they can talk about Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch, and you're going to join the Avengers. They're from, I heard, England now instead of Eastern Europe, and they can't mention that they're mutants or who their father is, because they'll address all that stuff in X-Men.
Right.
But I don't know, and this I'm sure won't happen because Hollywood isn't this awesome, they probably won't cast the same people to play
the
characters
that's the big
in both
thing.
Movies.
It has happened before. There was a time when they did the Elmore Leonard books after Get Shorty, when Elmore Leonard was really big. They did Out of Sight with George Clooney, and they did Jackie Brown with the Quentin Tarantino film. Those were both Elmore Leonard novels, and there's a minor role of an FBI agent, and they both cast Michael Keaton as that character.
Okay,
I think there
were
two different studios, two different directors, so it has happened.
Yeah.
You can do it even though... Even,
but I think something like that.
Even though he was signed to two different contracts, basically.
Yeah.
Oh, look at the Hulk. I mean, you've had now three different guys.
I was going to say,
but that's because the first two failed.
Yeah.
I actually liked the second one they did.
Although they did want Ed Norton to come back for Avengers.
Yeah, I guess that was contracts disputes or something. But that Eric Bana one, I mean, he's fighting like a giant jellyfish in the desert. That was pretty awful.
Yeah.
Well, then the Hulk's like 30 feet tall, and there's like cops running around by his ankles in San Diego. It's like the Hulk's not fucking Goliath. He's just.
The worst part about that is when Nick Nolte bites a power line.
Yeah, well, yeah, I completely forgot about that.
That's when I'm just like, I am not in this movie.
And actually, at that point in the film, too, it's the government's got Banner, and they've got him, you know, they're like, all right, he's the Hulk, we don't want him to turn into the Hulk, we don't want to agitate him. Let's get his alcoholic, abusive, crazy father, sit him down in front of him, and have him antagonize him. What the fuck kind of sense did that make? Yeah. Who was running that ship? General Thunderbolt Ross? And Ang Lee? What happened to that guy? Ang Lee, he's really falling apart.
Made something else. Because he made like the Ice Storm, he made Crouching Tiger. Made some big things before, and I think...
Nothing since then.
No, I think he made something. And this is...
Well, he did Life of Pi, wasn't it?
Oh, was that him?
Was that Ang
Lee? Yeah,
yeah, there you go. He did okay. He's not a superhero guy.
But I think Avengers is always cool because when you get the Justice League, the Justice League is going to handle anything, and I never worry about the safety of the world or anything, but the Avengers, it's like, these guys... aren't operating on the power level, but they have to deal with the same level of threats. This is why, like, the Kree-Skrull War, middle of an intergalactic war gets dropped on your feet, and you've got guys like Quicksilver, Hawkeye, and Scarlet Witch in the Andromeda Galaxy trying to deal with Ronan the Accuser, and then Rick Jones shows up and saves the world. And it's like...
Right.
To me, it's like, you'll never get anything better than stuff like that.
has the Justice League.
To me, that was the mind bendy psychedelic stuff of when Stan Lee let go. Like that whole.
Well, all the guys were on drugs and.
Yeah, yeah. In Marvel Comics The Untold Story, they basically all smoked a ton of dope.
And
broke down stories in each other's apartments. And that's why when you read them, you're like, what? And you're like, then he sings a song that goes into the head of everyone in the universe and it beats Blastar.
Right. And it's just like, I'm along for that ride, though.
Yeah, you're like, what track of the Pink Floyd album did this idea come to you?
Early 70s Avengers make a lot more sense when you're in college. Let us say.
Yes, in college.
Yeah, see, when I was in college, I was reading, like, Preacher and Sin. it was not as calm and trippy.
Yeah, no one in comics is doing anything as awesome as that stuff now, so there's nothing... When I was in college, at least, there was nothing... Like, Why the Last Man was good, but it's a very straightforward story, you know? It's like, there's nothing...
It doesn't have any swirly things.
None of the swirliness.
That was definitely a period. I mean, it's like when you go back and you watch original Star Trek and you see that... The psychedelia creeps up, and that is not in any other show.
No, nothing at the, you know,
like you don't
sense.
Yeah. Well, even these glowing lights that say you humans are children, and someday you will
even
evolve 60s into
Spider-Man
us.
Gets kind of
loopy. Oh, 60s Spider-Man goes nuts when Ralph Bakshi takes over. Yep. And he at one point he turns Mysterio into a guy with a green face and a long cigarette and a mustache, and he's just like, I'm Mysterio.
And it's like, what happened to the fishbowl and the purple cape?
Yeah, and these like polka dot backgrounds, and like Spider-Man's just swinging on nothing
for like 15 minutes in a row with the music going in the background. You're like, what is
it's
going on?
It's both cheap and weird.
Yeah,
very strange stuff.
Yeah. So okay, question for the assembled masses: has Justice League had a reformed character? Because the Avengers have had tons of them. Hmm. They're the only book, I think, that has really successfully incorporated that kind of character. Even Magneto in the X-Men stories never really worked as a reformed character.
No, they kind of just watered him down to the point where he wasn't interesting anymore. Yeah. And when he turned evil again,
all of a sudden
refreshing.
He's interesting. Yeah,
it's refreshing when Magneto goes bad, and it's even recently with him on the new Uncanny X-Men team. They're villains. Like, they're not running around heroes. They're abducting people. They're fighting the Avengers. It's like they're not, and they're like hiding out and training a mutant army and calling for a revolution. So they're not being heroic. But that's what I'm saying is like the Justice League, they're all like straight guys. They're all just very bland, very watered down. They're all good guys. It's the same guy. You know, Batman's interesting, but you put Batman with the Justice League and he stops being as interesting. You know, the interesting stories are where Batman comes up with plans to take down the whole Justice League. Like, that's interesting, but it's like.
Well, Batman's interesting in the Justice League, but in terms of contrast.
Right.
He's so different from everybody else. Yeah, there's dark characters in the Justice League, and there's characters that create a lot of tension. I'd say Guy Gardner is the Hawkeye of the Justice League.
Right. You know, only even more of a douche.
Guy Gardner's he'll be douchey where Hawkeye is just, you know, awesome. You know,
well, Hawkeye
oh, that opinion is not biased at all.
No, I'm not a big fan of Hawkeye or anything. I like Guy Gardner just as much. He's just a douchebag. I just think there. Yeah, like Joe was saying, there isn't. I can't think of anyone in the Justice League where this guy was like a former villain or an alcoholic or any kind of trying to be better themselves. They don't seem human. It's just like, I can't relate to Superman or Green Lantern anymore.
Batman's the closest they get to an anti-hero.
Well, I was just going to say Parallax was the only time I've seen DC turn a hero into a villain and have
and they copped out of that
villain.
Too because
eventually
they were just like, oh, he was possessed by a cosmic demon or whatever, but it's like, well,
yeah, but for those few
couldn't
years,
he be a grieving guy who snapped because everyone he's ever known and every place he's ever been is just nuked off the face of the planet, you know?
No, he actually couldn't because that's how they played him for the few years, but nobody would forgive him. The same way no one has forgiven Hank Pym for hitting
the
Wasp.
Let's address this Hank Pym thing right now. All right.
Because Hank Pym had been around for at least 20 years before this one
that
panel.
Happened, yeah.
Right.
And his character is defined
by that moment.
By
that and
moment.
Creating Ultron. And let's do a couple things here. All right. Firstly.
Also not a problem.
Hank Pym. All right, personal favorite of mine. Dave Redfield isn't a fan, but that's, Dave's, we'll forgive him.
I want to see that movie.
They are making an Ant-Man movie.
I know.
All right, so Hank Pym has got the bad reputation of creating a genocidal robot that wants to kill all of mankind. He slapped the Wasp and has gone back and hit her again. And
he hit her again? I know.
They've done it repeatedly now. And it's like a Prozac. He's like addicted to like Prozac.
Like you mean for pages and pages?
Pages and pages. This is backhanding
it's
the
kinda
wasp.
It's kind of like the Joker hitting Jason Todd with a crowbar. And
this is interesting. Hank Pym can slap the wasp and everyone loses their minds. But like Batman can slap Robin and it could be an internet joke and no one cares.
Yeah, because, well, that meme is from a different era.
Okay, I'll give you that. All right, but here's the thing. And Joe, you might know, I have no idea. I don't know who was writing Avengers at the time, and I think, who was drawing it? Was it Buscema, I think?
Yeah.
It was Buscema. Buscema hates comic books, and he hates superheroes.
Yeah, he only liked drawing Conan.
He only likes drawing Conan. He hates all this crap. The dialogue, though, the page direction where like the writer says this is what you're supposed to draw was Hank Pym pushes the wasp and he's like, ah, this is Marvel, we go extra, and he had him backhander. So blame the artist, not the writer, because that wasn't supposed to happen. And then now everyone like runs with this because fucking Buscema took some liberties and scarred that character for life.
Yeah, and you know what, I have read that story, and I think part of it part of that story, I was reading in comic book resources, part of it was kind of trying to shift the blame over, because no one really knows what it said in the script. But I do agree with you, because we know Stan Lee went to every other artist, John Romita, John Buscema, Steve Ditko, Don Heck, all those other Silver Age, and said, draw like Kirby. When you punch a guy, he goes flying away.
Yep, it's got to be extra just like, crazy.
It's got to be big like, and three-dimensional.
He bumps into his wife in a Kirby way.
Like, with his backhand, and she goes and sailing across the room.
Four flat fingers.
Yeah.
And dots coming off of her head.
And what I do like, and this is this side of New Avengers Illuminati, at least, is my second favorite thing Bendis has done with the Avengers. He wrote a book. It's like the oral history of the Avengers as told by the Avengers. So there's no art. It's basically just...
Oh, yeah, it's based on that Saturday Night Live book. Have you ever read Live from New York?
Yes. Yeah.
That's a really great book. And Bendis said he read that book and he wanted to do that for the Avengers.
And if you read the book, this is awesome.
And they printed it as a book, right? Didn't they pull it out of all the issues?
It was coming out of... Yeah, there was backups in Avengers and New Avengers for a couple months. And then they printed it as just the book. And it's actually probably my favorite thing he's written for Avengers. And I've reread it like 3 or 4 times. And it's basically... This was going on with the Avengers. Hawkeye? And Hawkeye's like, yeah, Hank and Janet, they're crazy. And then Janet will be like, yeah, we got married and as Wasp and Yellowjacket, and we tried out crazy everyone. And it was them rationalizing and explaining all the crazy stuff in continuity.
I think that's when it broke, because I've read my favorite run of the Avengers is that John Buscema run right before Kree-Skrull War, when the Vision is introduced. I mean,
yep, Black Panther joins the team.
It's crazy Roy Thomas stuff, but I would say it's probably the best art that I've ever seen John Buscema do.
Yeah.
Between that and the Silver Surfer run.
Yeah.
And the Silver Surfer stuff is beautiful.
With Thor, yeah.
Yeah, but some of the things he's doing with storytelling in that Avengers run is really phenomenal. But that Yellow Jacket story is nuts. And it's like Roy Thomas was one of those writers. He was like, well, I'm pulling this idea from the Golden Age, and I'm doing this from Stan. And
he was just mixing it all together.
He's the first fan fiction guy.
Yeah. Right.
Because he's like, I'll take all these stories and mix them into something else. But that story, which is another problem I always had with Avengers, when I would read West Coast Avengers, they would tell a story, and they'd be like, oh, well, that's because this happened in Avengers 10 years ago. And I'm like... I didn't read Avengers 10 years ago. What are you talking about? Like, when they go traveling through time.
Yeah.
And they go traveling into, like, old issues of the FF and the Avengers. I'm like, I don't know.
I'm lost.
Where am I?
Yeah, but that Yellow Jacket story, from its inception, is nuts.
It's crazy.
It's
yeah.
just nuts, where he's like, I'm a different guy. I'm Yellow Jacket.
He has, like, an identity crisis.
Right.
And he
breaks down.
Yeah, he has, like, a mental breakdown. And see, that's
and
what
he
I'm
talking But he marries...
as Yellow Jacket.
That would be like... If I decided in high school I was like, I'm Grunge Boy.
Yep.
And then I married my wife as Grunge Boy.
Yep.
And then didn't go, yeah, that was a crazy thing. He didn't even go, yeah, that was a weird phase I was going through.
And then he's since gone back and taken the... Because then he was, you know, Ant-Man again. He was Giant-Man again. He did all these Goliath.
He's been everybody again.
And then he'll come back and he'll be Yellow Jacket again. It's like, oh, I'm going to... Hey, Janet, remember that time I went crazy and dressed up in a yellow costume and pretend to be a buzzle and bzzz around? I'm going to dress up like that again.
Yeah, let's do that again.
And lead the Avengers. And it's just like, I love him for that.
But the thing about Yellow Jacket, it's the coolest of all his costumes.
It's pretty
awesome.
That is
true.
It's cool. I do like that Ant-Man helmet, which is why they created another Ant-Man.
Yeah, the Ant-Man...
Why Scott Lang has
Scott
that.
Lang was... And then,
that's got such a kooky Twilight Zone, retro, sci-fi look. The rest of the costume, there's not much going on.
He's
got,
you know. And then had something they adjust
but
to.
But Yellow Jacket's great.
I think it's a great
the wings
costume.
And the goggles. Yeah.
Yellow
the,
and black. It's a good
black,
look.
Yeah.
And he was running. I think he had a gun too. He was running with like a gun, like a laser zapper or something. It's pretty awesome. Anyone who has a gun. That's why I like Captain Cold and Mirror Master.
It's like Martin Lawrence running around the street in his underwear with a gun.
Yeah, that's what I want.
Tracy Morgan in the first.
Right, in Dirty Rock.
I'm a killer!
Swinging around a lightsaber.
I'm Yellow Jacket! I will buzz you! And come on, Liz Lemon!
I think they talk about it, too, is that Iron Man will be like, oh, you know, we called the Avengers meeting and Hank Pym showed up in the Yellow Jacket costume. Anytime he changes identities means he's slipping. I'm going to keep an eye on him. And it's just like, they always got to kind of watch him, you know?
The greatest thing in the world.
This week. So this week we're going to each recommend an Avengers story to read. Now, you guys have made some great points. You guys have actually made me think, oh, maybe I should get the West Coast Avengers Omnibus again because I liked it when I was a kid. And maybe I should read Hickman's Avengers because I liked his FF. So this has worked.
Oh, good.
You can agree to some degree. But so I think we'll each pick what we think is a quintessential Avengers story. And for me, not being an Avengers fan, I'm going to pick Iron Man's Armor Wars.
Okay. I've never actually read it, but it's in the omnibus that I just picked up.
Is it an omnibus?
I thought it was
No, it's later, actually. It's in the Silver Centurion days.
Oh, I thought this was in this omnibus. No, this is Demon in a Bottle. That's what I'm getting.
Demon
to.
In a Bottle is in there, okay. and that is great. But Armor Wars was my favorite story, and for some reason, it really bothers me. They only put it out in a trade. They didn't even do a premiere hardcover.
That was kind of silly.
Yeah, it's weird, and it has the same trade dress. So I think it was around the time where they realized the premiere hardcovers weren't selling that well, because they backed off them now, and now they're going to be Epic Collections.
Yeah, and I think, correct me if I'm wrong, Armor Wars is pretty much Iron Man decides, like, look, all these other guys are running around with armor. In part, I'm responsible for this because I'm a premier superhero on the planet with armor. He pretty much goes around and says, I'm just going to nuke like guys like the Beetle and all these other losers running around with armor and just take it away from him.
That's exactly what it is. It goes a little deeper where he stops, I think, the Ghost or Force. He's fighting one of his villains.
Uh-huh.
And then he takes apart his armor and he goes, wait a minute, this is Stark technology. Mm-hmm. Oh. How did you get Stark technology? And then he realized, oh, damn, it's out there. And then he says, what I invented, and there's a lot of Iron Man 1 is like that. He pulls from Armor Wars. He's like, the stuff I invented, criminals are using and hurting people. I invented the Iron Man armor to protect people, and people are perverting it.
Right. Okay, that's
doing
awesome.
Doing damage with it. And Tony, being single-minded, is, I got to take everybody down who has my technology. So he designs a scanner.
Mm-hmm.
And every armored character he runs into that has his technology, he has an EMP and blows their armor up. And he's like, now you can't use my technology. So first it's guys like the Beetle and the Guardsmen and stuff. But then there's a turn in the middle where he realizes some heroes have it.
Stingray,
the Guardsmen.
Yeah.
And then he goes, well, I can't let you have this. Because he's Tony and he's getting overly worked up because he's type A. And so he starts taking out the heroes that have his technology.
All right, that's awesome.
And, like, he fights the Mandroids and the Guardsmen. He fights, like, even armors that he designed.
Half a shield is Stark tech.
And in the middle of it, Captain America comes after him. Because this is also the time when Captain America's in the U.S. agent costume.
Okay.
Yeah. Because his story, he gave up being Captain America. So he asked Tony to design a shield. And then in the story, he's like, wait, what are you doing?
Yeah.
And then they fight.
That's awesome.
And it gets to the point where it builds up where the government goes after him. And that's also the... And spoilers, but it's 30 years old.
I was going to say 30 years old. You haven't read it, go fuck
that's
yourself.
Also the end of the Silver Centurion armor. Because they create an armored character called Firepower who looks like Ironmonger, except he has a nuclear missile on his back.
Good right. God.
And that's who he fights at the end, and it destroys the Silver Centurion armor.
Okay.
So then Tony designs the 1990 armor, that John Romita with the big red shoulder pads.
Yeah.
That's the introduction of that. But I've always loved that story because that was, first of all, I always said Iron Man is a technology book, which is why I like it more than Avengers. And Fraction was great at doing that. Fraction was great at using the internet and, you know, the new technology to explain these heroes. So he was fighting other guys with armor. He was fighting other guys with machines. And I love that. I'm less interested when he fights Madame Mask or the Mandarin. But it was also about his character. It was also about, Tony will go to lengths that you
shouldn't
go to.
He'll go too far.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, and Tony will ruin friendships and Tony will cross the line. You know,
to do what he thinks is right.
Yeah, because everybody says, oh, Tony Stark, alcoholic. But that's really only a symptom of who he is.
Well, when he took Thor's DNA.
Yeah.
Yeah, same thing. Yeah, even they did it in, when he builds the Ragnarok or whatever they call it now. Yeah. You know, that clone with Klor.
Right. Yeah, we could do a whole Iron Man podcast.
We should.
But, we will. We do this every week. Sometimes we're low on ideas.
I've got a new one. We haven't talked about Iron Man yet.
Yeah, just talking about Iron Man. But that's my favorite. It has appearance by Captain America. That's my favorite in all the families. So I need you guys to tell me, what are the best Avenger stories?
The top of the Avenger story for me is always going to be the Kree-Skrull War. Mm-hmm. And this is several reasons. Captain Marvel's awesome, and he's almost front and center in the Kree-Skrull War. A lot of how it gets taken really picks up is follows him, and him being Kree is part of that. So they're in the middle of a Kree-Skrull intergalactic war. Vision almost gets killed, and it's probably the craziest thing Neil Adams has ever drawn, is Ant-Man going inside the Vision and like fighting his off, his whatever.
And Neil Adams and
His version of like the white blood cells.
You gave me that book for my birthday last year.
Yeah, it's a great book. I love it. And then awesome. At the same time, the Avengers are getting Thor, Cap, and Iron Man aren't really around. They're not part of the team right now. It's guys like Hawkeye and Quicksilver. And the Avengers are publicly getting attacked for harboring Captain Marvel because he's a Kree. So it's like they're getting attacked publicly. Vision almost gets killed. Half the Avengers get abducted and sent all the way across the galaxy in the middle of a war. And then you got a guy like Rick Jones, who's like our human element trying to relate to all this, in the middle of it trying to shut down this intergalactic war that's been raging for thousands of years, that Earth just became like, you know, beachhead, you know, number one. And that to me was always something where it's like, all these things stacked against them, and it came down to like three Avengers in space across the universe ending it. And we don't get to see that. And they actually did it really good in Marvel's, where the Avengers just disappear after all this like public backlash. It's from like a, you know, the reporter's point of view.
Right.
And we don't know what's going on. All we know is there's some huge war. We might get annihilated any minute by some alien super weapon we can't comprehend. And the Avengers are missing, presumably dead or out in space trying to like fight something. And then it goes all the way back to, what is that, Fantastic Four number 2 or 3, where they first introduced the Skrulls?
Right.
Right.
Goes all the way back to then and shows that where those Skrulls have been for the last, at that point, 15, 20 years or something like
three
that.
Three cows
shot me down.
That
three
is cows. The ultimate 60s crazy,
yeah,
bizarre, poetic.
And it's and when yeah, Neil when Adams wasn't drawing the issues, Buscema was. So either way, you're getting some of the best art that ever came out of that time.
I did have a problem with the end of that, because it did fall into that late 60s, 70s of like Rick Jones dreams up all the Golden Age guys, and then they come out. It's like very Yellow Submarine.
Yeah, it's very trippy. But then like, Busiek goes back to it and says that there's this Destiny Force or some nonsense
that he tapped into.
And Busiek's whole Avengers Forever run is based off of the Kree-Skrull War and these powers that Rick Jones may or may not still have.
Yeah, and the Kree-Skrull War also set the tone for Avengers for the next 20 years, and it made other epic story arcs like Dark Phoenix Saga possible.
Right? Yeah.
Because nobody did anything like that really before. It was all one or two shots.
Right.
And everything was pretty contained in their own book. Both the Kree and Skrull were created for the Fantastic Four. The Inhumans are in that.
Yeah. It's one of the first all the Inhuman stuff that Neil Adams draws.
One of the first major stories to say this is the Marvel Universe and everybody can go everywhere.
Yeah. Which was awesome. They were grabbing things from, like you said, all over the place. I mean, the end of it, Hawkeye is using Goliath formula. So he's giant. He almost, you know, you think he gets killed at the end of it. You know, Captain Marvel, Thor, and Vision are like flying around destroying a Skrull armada. It's just like Captain America's commandeering like Skrull flagships. It's just like the whole thing was just awesome.
Crazy, yeah. Crazy awesome.
Yeah.
And for me, I'm going to recommend that you go back and read the very early West Coast Avengers. I mean, I know you already like those books, but especially the miniseries, because it is just fun. It is the best of the fun.
You've been buying the back issues.
Yes, I've been buying the back issues.
So, but you say the omnibus is worth it then, both of you?
Yes, most
definitely. From what I've, and I, like I said, I just started it and I love it. And, you know, like I said, bias notwithstanding, but you've got Iron Man and Silver Centurion, you got Hawkeye on the team, you know, Tiger's going to show up, Hank Pym's there, you know, you've got, what's his name, Wonder Man's on the team, who's, you know, I always forget is like as strong as Thor, you know, so it's like it's a really cool team, and it's not, other than Iron Man, there's none of your quote-unquote A-lister Avengers on the team, which to me makes it interesting because you've got other guys.
I consider
to
Hawkeye to be an A-lister.
I do, but a lot of people don't.
He's not one of the big three because he's...
No, but if there's a big four, I consider him the fourth.
In terms of sales, he's Martian Manhunter. He gets a book every now and then, but it never stays.
Right.
Yeah, and with West Coast Avengers, you get to see them setting up, you get to see them getting used to each other. You get Hawkeye and Mockingbird, and they're doing their thing, and you get a lot of really good banter, and then Tony Stark shows up. It's just a really great time.
All right, there's $50 gone on Amazon.
Gone, yeah.
Poof.
Well, yeah, this has been interesting. As I said, you guys have done a really good job of kind of changing my opinion. As I said, we'll always be an Iron Man fan more than an Avengers fan, but you have reminded me of the stories I have read, which I've really enjoyed, and let me know about some of the books that are coming out now that are doing real well. And hopefully a few people listening are feeling the same way I am.
And on that note, I'll try to make this a regular thing. Because this is an Avengers themed podcast, if you come in and mention the podcast, the store will copy you Uncanny Avengers number 1, which is Rick Remender and John Cassidy's, the start of their new run. And it's basically Captain America, after the events of AVX, decides, you know, putting Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch on the Avengers way, way back in the day wasn't enough. We need a team that's half mutants, half Avengers. And it's like the Avengers Unity Squad, I think they call it. And it takes place after Remender's run on Uncanny X-Force, which you don't need to know, but that was a good book too. I'll give you Uncanny Avengers number 1 if you come in and mention the podcast.
That's fantastic. And where's the store again?
19 South LaGrange Road, LaGrange, Illinois.
And as always, you can follow me on @NotInMyBook Twitter, which is the one Twitter we have for the show. Like the Caffeinated Comics Facebook page and give us a review on the iTunes page.
Subscribe.
Yeah. Joe, you have Facebook and you don't want anybody there.
You can find me on Facebook or I'm at the store sometimes.
Caffeinated Comics is a Not In My Book production.
Thank